you're cutting a lot of people's lives because a lot of people depend on OSHA to make sure that the job is secure for them and safe. I've had friends die in explosions that OSHA wasn't a part of. As you know, as firemen, the six firemen that died in Kansas City, in the explosion, I was there. OSHA didn't have anything to do with it. The company had placed explosives in a trailer and not marking the trailer. And when the trailer caught a fire, the firemen tried to put it out and it blew up. If you put OSHA, you quit OSHA out and tell people that they just work anywhere they want to work. And we need OSHA here to make sure that it's safe for us to work. You have a lot of people that, with a lot of companies that folded when OSHA comes on the scene. So these kind of companies we want to get rid of is companies that don't work in a safe environment. So I really think that you ought to consider keeping OSHA around, because I think if you cut OSHA, you're really asking for a lot of different types of lawsuits. Thank you.
Thank you. Jay Quakenbush.
Mr. Quakenbush had to leave, as did Margaret Van Swine and Pat Ivey. So we'd like to go on to Brian Brubaker.
Hey, Mr. Brubaker.
Hello, my name is Brian Brubaker, and I'm an alumni of the university. And I don't think I need to state the obvious, which is that the university needs $16.3 million more than I had last year, because that's been proven by General Hamilton and many others. I'm worried about what my degree from UAF will be worth if the university goes downhill. That worries me a lot. I'm willing to make a sacrifice if you feel that it's necessary in taxes or lower dividend or no dividend, so that my alma mater can survive and thrive. And if Mr. Bundy thinks that we need to lose some road construction money, that might be all right, too. Finally, I'd like to mention that I will be voting in the next election based on how you, as my representative, fund this university. And I'll be telling my friends to do the same thing, and many of them have already said that they plan to. So please support the university and Mr. Hamilton and the $16.3 million.
Thank you.
What district is he from?
He lives in Fairbanks. Ann Jamison, and then Ruth Burnett.
Ms. Jamison had to leave. We have two people remaining to testify, Nancy Webb and Carl Benson. Ms. Webb will go first.
Okay.
Hello, members of the committee, and thank you for my chance, too. As you know, I'm in the Brew Assembly here, and I wanted to weigh in for, please, no elimination of revenue sharing in safe communities. I recognize their citizens, including many of my constituents, who want to see reductions in the state budget. However, I think this kind of cut is going to be seen as somewhat of a dishonest kind of cut, because it will end up as an increase in local taxes. And I guarantee you, there's no way around that. I don't think it will satisfy these people, and I think it will miss the mark. We certainly use our revenue sharing and state communities money for very good uses. We always put the life and safety projects at the top of the list each time we go through the budget for our matching grant projects. Deferred maintenance, some of that's covered that way. We recently created our own deferred maintenance fund, and we put in there our money that we were going to use to match for the North Pole ice rink. And believe me, as a hockey player, and there are plenty of people here who wanted to see that ice rink, I think that's an example of us taking responsibility there on the local level. But I don't think that the zeroing out of revenue sharing and safe communities is a good move at all. I would also urge you not to cut services that have the effect of helping communities generate their own economic momentum. And certainly the university looms high on this list with me. The university is a major force for economic development for the whole state and certainly in Fairbanks. And I'd like to see that university funded so that we can be proud of it again. We need to also maintain trust in public trust in government, and I put APOC and public broadcasting, gavel-to-gavel, public safety, OSHA, and health inspections all in that category, and I would be very leery of cuts there. We need
need to retain the public's trust in government while we go through this painful process. And then I would like to propose a few things that might end up with cuts. I'd like to see that we take a hard look at some very dear senior programs here, and it's not popular to say this, I know, but I do think there may be seniors whose property tax exemption is not essential to their welfare because they're well off enough, and I think that goes for the longevity bonus. It should be income-based. I think most people will recognize the fairness in that, and that will bring some more revenue into the picture. I also think privatizing the Pioneers homes is something to look at. I know privatizing doesn't work for every government service, but maybe this one it would. And so to close, I also would still urge you to look hard at the revenue side. I know you will. I think it's fair to say we're all at that point now. We must look to our other wealth that we have. I know that I support raising the fuel tax. I think it's a legitimate user's fee in that sense, and I think it should be used for DOT maintenance before it's used to match with federal projects. And I'm one that really wants to see improvements in the transportation system. So I don't want to take too much time. I agree that the $120 million in the energy fund should go back in the general fund, and I certainly lend you whatever support I can in the difficult task that you have. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Thank you for having some suggestions, and I'm sure we'll be discussing those ideas with you further. And also, thank you for not prioritizing education for the place for first place to take a hit at the local level. I appreciate that. Finally, we'll take Mr. Carl Benson in Fairbanks.
Thank you. I'm Carl Benson. I'm Farmers Loop in Fairbanks. And I want to say that in its goal to cut the budget, to continue cutting the budget, the legislature is philosophically on the wrong course. Cuts to this already decimated state budget will only hurt and cannot help. It is said that we have a shortfall of $1 billion. That's 1,000 million. The cuts that are planned would yield 40 million. This is only 4% of what is stated to be the need. And for perspective, it's 10 times, about 10 times less than the amount paid out to the IRS in federal income tax on last year's permanent fund dividend. A lot of people don't think that, but a tremendous amount of our dividend money goes right off to the feds. The so-called budget gap does not exist. To say that we have such a gap means that we don't count $2 billion of our income. As you know, I'm talking about the income on investments from the permanent fund. No one tries to balance his personal budget by ignoring his largest source of income. Why does the legislature ignore its largest source of income in talking about the budget? The proposed cuts do no good but cause lots of damage. The proposed cuts to public broadcasting, as an example, amounts to 0.007% of the stated need. This is obviously not aimed at, quote, solving the problem, unquote, but only at antagonizing nearly everyone. It is especially foolish to continue on this road of witless cuts when a long-term solution to the budget program is available, which does not involve using any of our savings, nor even affecting the dividend program. The principle of the permanent fund is protected by the Constitution. A lot of people don't seem to realize that. But it is time to start using some of the earnings for their intended purpose. The CBR also earns about $400 million a year now. The state has serious needs, and it's time to use some of our earnings to pay for them. It is not necessary to spend any of the principal of any savings account to do this. And, as you know, we don't have any tax revenue like other states do and like we once had. I think the plan put forth by the governor needs to be considered as the best plan put on the table so far. But instead, we mail money out to everyone who has been here for a year. Under these conditions, it is foolish to talk poor mouth and say that we're in budget trouble. I defy anyone to really challenge that statement.
Right. Thank you very much. I think that concludes the testimony from Fairbanks. I apologize to all those off-net sites who've been online for a number of hours. We are going to try and allow everybody the opportunity to testify that wants to testify. So if you bear with us, we're going to try and keep the schedule as much as possible and then blend in those that we've been not able to get to this point in time. We'll go to Anchorage now. We had scheduled to begin there at 7 o'clock, and we're about a half hour behind there. We'll take some testimony from Anchorage, and then we'll go back to some of the off-net sites. So recognizing that they have an assembly meeting here, that he is like to begin with Mayor Maestrom and also Ralph Samuels.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. This is the mayor. I'd like to ask Ralph Samuels to go first. Ralph is the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce here in Anchorage. We met this afternoon, and it's been our understanding that there's some feeling on the budget subcommittee or the finance committee that that you're acting primarily because the Chamber of Commerce is support the cuts in revenue sharing. And we had quite a good meeting with the legislative committee in the chamber and a number of the executive committee members. And I think Mr. Samuels would like to respond to that.
Certainly. Go right ahead, Mr. Samuels.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to take just a moment to discuss the issue of municipal revenue sharing and how this proposed cut fits into the Chamber's longstanding position of reducing the size of government and cultivating fiscal responsibility for the state. The first fact I'd like to point out here is this is not really a reduction in public sector spending, but merely a shift of responsibility. The burden of payment for services being shifted to the Anchorage property taxpayers is still an increase in taxes, no matter who is collecting them. If the legislature insists on reducing municipal revenue sharing, at the very least, it should be a phased-in project, with the community not to have to withstand dramatic tax increases with no time whatsoever to prepare for them. This is the only fiscally sound path to take. Fiscal responsibility is the number one priority of the Anchorage business community and has been for several years. In our first resolution on this topic passed earlier this year, we asked the legislature for a prioritization of services so that inadequate, ineffective, and inefficient programs are eliminated. The program cost shifting in municipal revenue sharing cuts does not do any of these things. It merely passes the buck. On our second resolution, we propose the following order be used to solve the fiscal gap. First, once again, the cuts to inefficient programs. The second, the use of earnings. And the third, to taxes. With a zeroing out of the municipal revenue sharing budget, we've gone straight to taxes, strictly on the Anchorage property taxes. As a policy, the Anchorage Chamber has specifically stayed away from the numbers game of telling the legislature how much to cut here, how much to cut there, and which programs to target for cuts, which programs to target to lift. After much discussion about the board, we've decided that the legislature is the appropriate place to tell if a program is truly worth the dollars that we put into it, and if we're getting our money's worth. What we get out of a program is just as important as the money that we're putting into it. We do not have the expertise nor the time to put into analyzing every budget program down there. I have to emphasize, however, that the zero-budget municipal revenue sharing program with no phase-out in place is simply bad economics for the city of Anchorage. As much as I sympathize with all of your attempts to cut the size of the state budget, and we do realize how difficult it is, putting the burden on the Anchorage property tax owners was never the intent of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. The context of my remarks are with a backdrop of oil industry layoffs, BP Arco merger, Car Safeway merger, high dollar jobs, and a lot of economic uncertainty, which is going on in addition to the $1 billion shortfall in the state government. And I'd like to urge the legislature to examine a cut of this size in 1 year is a big hit for any community to take. And I think especially Anchorage with the mergers that we're facing. I realize a long list of people who felt our work short.
Thank you very much, Mr. Samuels. Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I'd just like to say that we've accomplished a lot in Anchorage in the past 4 years. I think most of you know we've cleaned up the town. We've improved the streets a lot. We've cut crime dramatically. In fact, crime is down about 40% in Anchorage. And by the end of this year, by the end of 1999, crime will be down by about 50% in the city, as a big accomplishment. Now, this year, as we work on our budget, we have been working for the past 9 months to bring in a budget that will result in a reduction of taxes this year. And after 9 months of work, we have done it. We've brought in a budget, presented it to the Assembly today for final action that will reduce taxes by $300,000 this coming year. Now, $300,000 isn't a lot of money to reduce taxes, but it's a big victory on our part to be able to bring taxes down that because it's only 300 jobs we'd have to have cut the year before. So we've got some real challenges ahead of us to deal with that. A more likely scenario is to increase taxes up to the tax cap. Right now we're $7.5 million below the tax cap, and we worked 9 months to get down there. A more likely scenario is to immediately increase taxes up to the tax cap. That's another $7.5 million in taxes to Anchorage as a result of this action, and then cut 200 to 300 jobs. Now, what I'd like to do is kind of share the timing of the cuts of the jobs. We don't have the luxury of taking a lot of time to do it. If the legislature is out May 18th, which is a Monday, or May 17th, I believe, which is a Monday, that week we would have to begin planning the cuts. We would take the last 10 days or so in May to determine where these cuts had to be. The final decisions would be made the first 2 weeks in June. By July 1st, we will cut, I would say, 200 to 300 jobs by the 1st of July directly as a result of this. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the 400 jobs that would be lost from BP and the possible 400 jobs lost from ARCO. This is another 200 to 300 jobs directly as a result of this action, in addition to raising property taxes by about $7.5 million. Now, how are we going to do that? I don't know right now. But we'll have about a week and a half or 2 weeks to make that decision, to figure out how to do it, and to do it as soon as you finish the budget. Because you're talking about changing a budget, and we will get the information when the year's almost halfway done, probably 40% done. So I have some real problems with the timing of it. We don't have a year to prepare. We had 1 week's notice. I found out about this about 5 days ago. And by this time, we had worked 9 months on our budget this year. So the time is absolutely, I think, very bad for the city of Anchorage, very bad for anybody to find out that they're getting this late date. I'm also concerned about the lack of input. This, I understand, may be the only public hearing before this committee. I know when the Deferred Maintenance Committee worked on their issues, they toured around the state. They went to the different communities to find out what the problems were and what the legislature could do. And that's something that I would suggest that you folks should be doing. You should be talking to the different communities to understand what kind of impact it's going to have. And I'm also concerned about what I would call confusion of purpose. I keep hearing people say, we've got to make tough cuts. We've got to make hard cuts because we've got to avoid taxes in the future. We don't want to have taxes in the future. Well, it seems very confusing to say we want to increase taxes $7.5 million this year so we can avoid taxes in the future. I think the confusion of purposes is very, very obvious to anybody who looks at it at all, anybody who takes a look at this issue from the perspective of the city. Now, I don't mind taking cuts, and I don't mind taking cuts in revenue sharing. We've taken a lot of cuts in revenue sharing. In fact, the legislature has cut our revenue sharing $23 million just over the last 10 years. And that's not from a base of 1985, which was a high year. We started from a base of 1988, which is more realistic to start with. You've got $23 million. From our revenue share in that period of time. If you cut another $17 million, that will be $14 million. When you add that to the lack of payment for the senior citizens tax exemption that was given by the legislature, told that it would be funded by the legislature, and now it's a burden of the taxpayers of Anchorage, that's $53 million in additional taxes that the legislature has created here in the city of Anchorage, even if our budget didn't go up a penny. Now, I hear Mr. Bundy talking about the fact that everybody says we need to cut. I don't know anybody who said we'd like to pay more property taxes here. You guys have already added $53 million in property taxes in Anchorage. We'd like to see you add some more property taxes. I don't hear that from anybody. I don't hear it from the Chamber of Commerce. I spoke at the Chamber of Commerce on Monday, and somebody asked me the question. I wasn't planning on speaking on this, but somebody asked me a question about what I thought about the $17 million in cuts in revenue sharing to Anchorage. I gave a very enthusiastic response and indicated I thought it was a terrible decision done behind closed doors, without input from the community, and I got a spontaneous ovation from every person in that room, and that was the Chamber of Commerce. That was the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, who I see people in the Finance Committee leaning on and said, those are the people that want us to cut that revenue share. You know, I think that we need to have a lot of discussion about this. I think to do it with 1 week's notice, to do it on a current year's budget, is absolutely, positively bad public policy. I think if it is going to be cut, if you are going to cut the state budget, we'll take our cuts along with anybody else. If you're going to cut the state budget 2%, 3%, 4%, we'll take 2, 3, 4% in revenue sharing. But to cut this out totally, to zero it out totally, when all that's doing is passing the buck to somebody else, the positively easiest decision, Chairman Mulder, you could make, the absolutely easiest decision you could make is to pass the buck to somebody else and let them do it. It's dead wrong. And I think there's a lot of hard taken out education for the state, otherwise it would be about $10,000. Taken out education for $6,000 compared to $1,000. You say, well, that's apples and oranges. We have different things. And you're right, it is. Where does Alaska, in terms of the state, rank in states in America in terms of spending? Right at the top. Where does the city of Anchorage rank? Below average. And there is a big difference between trying to take this kind of cut out of a city that only spends $1,000 per citizen. Now, we have employees who work hard. They have less holidays than state employees do. They get less leave than state employees do. They get less pay for the same job. It was just a study completed that showed 70% of the state employees who can be matched up with jobs exactly the same as the city employees are paid more than city employees. And so when you combine the fact that there's less leave for the city employees, there's less holidays for the city employees, there's less pay for the city employees, and the city employees have to work 40 hours a week for their job. They have to work 40 hours a week for their pay. And the folks that you represent, the folks that you're responsible for, are working 37 hours a week. Now, I think that there are some areas that you can think about in terms of cutting the state, and we will share those cuts. We're absolutely here to share those cuts. If you want to cut in the state budget by a certain percentage, we'll be with you. We'll take those cuts, and we won't complain. But I'll tell you what, we have some major problems here in the city of Anchorage as a result of this action. And it's going to be a big fight. It's the biggest threat that I see since I've been mayor to the continued quality of life in the city, the continued function of the city, and the continued safety of the citizens. It's going to be the biggest fight that I've been in this city for the next, since I've been mayor. And it's a very important one for me, and it's one that all of us are committed to really representing ourselves well in. Thank you very much. Otherwise, I've got no problem with it.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Mayor. Now we'll go to Bruce Williams and Barbara Williams.
My name is Barbara Williams. My husband, Bruce Williams, and we have started the Alaska Indoor Workers Alliance, and we would like to talk to the House Finance Committee about not cutting the budget for Commerce and Economic Development and the Department of Labor. Injured workers in this state have a hard enough time securing benefits and having safe places to work. And we don't feel that cutting the budget in this area would be beneficial to injured persons. We have persons that are dying from chemical injuries in the state right now that can't get reasonable accommodation under the ADA. We feel that the state needs to preserve these programs and, in fact, increase their budget so that they can operate better and more efficiently, because we've been part of the workers' compensation system for a period of over 7 years. We know what's going on with it. We know that it does need to be fixed, and we know that budget cuts for
Thank you very much, Barbara. Does Bruce wish to testify?
Yes, I am. I'm Bruce Williams, and I'm one of the Alaska Indoor Workers Alliance, and I feel that these cuts are probably necessary in some instances, and other instances they're not. But OSHA shouldn't be cut at all. It should be, a product of more money, because there's 60% of the employers out there that are running with no insurance at all and not paying their share. And that's what's taking advantage of all of us. And without OSHA or the Division of Insurance, the Department of Labor out there to watch, who's going to watch it now? They don't watch it. It's like cutting our hands off.
All right. Thank you very much, Bruce. Next, we'll go to Laura Walden and then Henry Holland.
Looking out for our interests. You're looking out for your own. And I don't appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Laura. And Anne-Marie? Thank you very much, Anne-Marie. And then Jenny Murray, and then Chancey Croft.
Yes.
Could you please wrap up, Jenny?
Sure. This morning, many of you might have seen the editorial in the Daily Newsminer. It says something, part of it says, if the state is so concerned with how much tobacco is costing our society that it will work to get millions from the tobacco companies, then the state ought to use that money to reduce tobacco use. And they go on to say, let's put our money where our mouths are. And we couldn't agree more, and we hope you will too. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jenny. Next, we'll go to Chancey Croft. Okay, Chancey's not there. Okay, I'm going to go back to Bethel. We've held these people online for about 4 hours now. So is there anyone remaining in Bethel?
Bethel is gone.
Anchorage, if everybody else has signed off? Okay. There are some off-nets still there?
Yeah.
Okay, South Neck Neck, are you still there? Okay.
And then give me a second after you call your name.
Okay. Is Sally with Good News Bay there? Sally, are you there?
Yes.
Please begin. I apologize for the delay. We do have the letter on the file, yes, and we've put it into the record. Thank you very much for it, Sally.
Okay, thank you. I have one more council member.
Okay. Go right ahead, please.
On behalf of the City of Good News, just a minute. Hello?
Yes. Please identify yourself for the record.
Yes, my name is Anisha Madden.
Would you spell your last name, ma'am?
M-A-N-O-K.
Okay, thank you very much, Alicia. Please begin. All right. Thank you very much, Alicia. Appreciate the comments. Is there anyone else
thank
there,
you.
Sally or Alicia, in Good News Bay?
No, thanks.
All right. Thank you very much. Stanley and Kweeflet?
Yeah. Good afternoon. My name is Stan Spielman. I'm Vice Mayor for City of Kweeflet as a member of Alaska Municipal Lake Insurance Program. And on behalf of the Kweeflet City Council, I have here with me Ms. Elizabeth Dillon and David Dipchik. And I'm in opposing of cutting down the municipal assistance and revenue share because City of Kweeflet relies on municipal assistance and state revenue share, which we funnel into our general fund. And our general fund pays for the Wasatch Area Department, the Kweeflet Health Center, the Sanitation Department, Public Safety Department, and Public Works Department also for our city office, which is the admin and finance. We rely on municipal assistance and state revenue sharing for these departments operating, and without no municipal assistance or state revenue sharing, we'll have to face some departmental cuts, in which the city of Kweeflet has a 5% sales tax, and already to the max. And I'd like to have the municipal assistant and the revenue sharing be going and not be eliminated, because our number one priority is to the benefit of our public health and welfare. And I'm opposing the municipal assistant and state revenue sharing fees. And I'm opposing it for these municipal assistants to be operating instead of eliminating these revenues, which we, which our community relies on.
All right. Thank you very much, Stanley. Is there anyone else in Kwikset there, Stanley?
Yeah, here's Elizabeth Phillips. She's a council member.
Yes, sir. My name is Elizabeth Dillon. I'm the city council member for Kwikset.
Please begin, ma'am.
Also, I'm the Indian Child Welfare Aid Coordinator for Kwikset IRA Council, and I've been born and bred in Kwikset. And the population is close to 700 people. Living in my community. I feel that both state of Alaska and federal government bodies have responsibility to people of Alaska for their health, welfare, and safety. On behalf of City of Kwikset and citizens of this community, I am urging the legislation not to eliminate important funded services such as health and social services, police funding, childcare services, education, police protection, water and sewer system, and so on. Because I feel once these vital services fundings are cut, the problems will arise, such as child abuse and neglect, crime rate will rise, illnesses, suicide, domestic violence, teen pregnancy, and substance abuse. City funding, safe community funding, and revenue sharing are important and belong to the second-class small world cities. And that they shouldn't be cut on world small cities. And on education, I'm a firm believer in education on preschool, Head Start, elementary, secondary school, college, and also on prevention programs such as substance abuse and suicide, FAS, and also human and domestic violence and human services are vital resource to the bush communities, and not to mention public broadcasting. So therefore, I am requesting cuts shouldn't be done, but increased to give proper and equal services to small communities and people in rural Alaska. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Elizabeth. Is that the last person in Kwikset?
Good evening. I'm Dave Gibson, the utility manager for the city of Kwikset.
Dave, what's your last name again, please, for the record?
Gibson.
Could you spell that, please?
Pardon me?
Could you spell that for us, please, for the record?
It's E-P-C-H-O-O-K.
Okay, thank you very much. Please begin.
Thank you. I'm speaking in opposition of reducing the budget in the areas specifically targeting rural services. One of these areas that I don't see that's really on the budget is improving the water and sewer utility services, more or less the sanitation conditions in rural Alaska, and I'm wondering looking toward improving the conditions here in the village. And when the municipality faces budget cuts, it takes away some of these efforts in areas that are essential to the health and safety of the public in general. Now, the municipal assistance and revenue sharing elimination would impact those vital services in our community and more or less create a lot more problems in other areas for municipal services. In public television, I believe that budget should be increased to broaden the level of service provided by that broadcast service, because it opens a window for children that are living in rural communities about the world they live in. And it's an educational experience worth watching.
Could you please conclude, David?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony tonight. Next, we'll go to Felix, and I think it's Scammon Bay.
Yeah, this is Felix Walker from Scammon Bay, as the mayor of Scammon Bay. My last name is Improving Road. Law enforcement hired by city would be no longer a must. Health and welfare of our community would be in jeopardy. All these things will be hurting in our community. I know that with no money, our city office, there will be no longer workers in our and we would become one government. As I say, one government, and we don't have no more money in our city office, and we will turn over to our tribal government and become one government. That's how I feel about revenue sharing cut.
All right. Thank you very much, Felix. Is there anyone else there, Felix, that wishes to testify?
No, at this time, there's no one. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much, Felix. Next, we'll go to Norvik. We have Fred in Norvik. Fred, are you there? We must have lost Fred. Those are the only off-net sites that I have right now. Fred, are you there in Norvik?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes. Please go. Please give your last name for the record.
Okay. Fred Barr. I'm the mayor of Norvik. B-A-H-R. First, I'd like to thank you, Chairman Mulder, and the other finance committee members for the time to speak. This is a devastating cut for Norvik. On the city, for our city administration, is 20%. I believe we faxed you a letter. You should have it in your file.
We do. We have it in the file. Thank you very much, Fred. Go, please.
Basically, I want to say that I have to agree with Mayor Maestrom, Rick Maestrom out of Anchorage, and the borough mayor out of Kodiak. It surprises me. I was in Juneau with AML back in early March, I believe it was, when Senator Drew Pierce asked for rural Alaska to help solve this budget crisis. And I appreciated the fact that they finally asked us to give our comments. But here we have, and I have to agree with them, that this is a cut. It's a cut, and actually we are unable to raise, we have no options. important. This would affect our police. We'd actually have to go to halftime in our city administration. We'd lose two jobs, and then the people here would have to find work other places because at halftime they couldn't afford to live in Norfolk. So I know we can't tax our way out of this problem, and we can't cut our way out, and we can't spend our way out, but to take it away from the municipal that provides police and it helps support the health clinic, it does works on roads, it supports the city administration so that we can try to, for example, for safe communities, lose the police or two here, we have increased problems with the crime rate, with suicides, with child abuse and domestic violence. These are all issues that roll off of not having those services provided. So I really ask you to seriously consider, if you are going to do a cut, you have been cutting revenue sharing for the last, since 1985 here, it's been cut 70% already. That we do it in a planned way, that we have time to try to come up with ways to make up that funding that we so rely on. And it seems to me that the planning of this and the way it's being done and the shortness of public comment, I've been sitting here since 5 o'clock because I feel so strongly about it, that it seems to be an unplanned, just a spur-of-the-moment decision. And that the real impact, and I think all of us have said the same thing. You've heard it over and over and over, that this is not the way to do these cuts or not the way to get the people behind lowering the cost of doing business in Alaska on the government side. And on another issue here, because I agree with all the other villages, we've all in the same situation, PCE is another one, power cost equalization. I urge you to come up with a plan to fund that at least. Give us time to use passive energy to make up for what the PCE helps us with in the high cost of energy here. Public TV is a way for our people to kind of escape. We're under great stress here. We're in the clash of cultures. And if you cut out public TV, we're also going to see a raise in crime rate and drinking and all the other benefits of those activities. So I ask you as a committee, as representatives of all the people of Alaska, and we're Alaskans too, that you seriously consider planning this out in a better way. Find out more, and I think you've gotten hit over the head here, and justifiably so, because of the shortness and the drasticness of these cuts. And with that, I thank you for your time, and I wish you all well.
Thank you very much. We need to go now back to Anchorage, and in Anchorage, Eric Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Eric Myers. I serve on the board of the American Cancer Society here in Anchorage. I think we know that if there were a deadly infectious disease in Alaska that was systematically killing one new person per day, the legislature would trip all over itself to fund efforts to combat such a disease. Yet that's precisely the case with tobacco, even while the infections, if you will, are taking place by expensive and sophisticated advertising and marketing. Yesterday, as we heard earlier, another Alaskan died from tobacco-related causes just as the day before, and the day before that, literally thousands of Alaskans over the past decade. I'm neither a prohibitionist nor a Puritan, and if this were simply a matter of stupid adults making foolish choices, it would be one thing, but it is not. Nearly all tobacco addiction starts in childhood, and that's why tobacco is regarded as a pediatric disease. How many future Alaskan children are addicted and eventually killed by the tobacco industry is in large part up to you. The tobacco settlement with the industry that we entered last November will provide $669 million to Alaska over the next 25 years. This is not a windfall, but rather restitution to the many thousands of Alaskans who have died from cancer, emphysema, stroke, heart attack, and other tobacco causes. The settlement is a unique opportunity to prevent the past from becoming the future. We have the resources. We know what needs to be done. The experience in California, Massachusetts, Oregon, and Florida all demonstrate that investing in tobacco control programs works and will save lives. There is no more fundamental government purpose than protecting the public health. The fact that this effort is maybe viewed by some as a new program provides what is perhaps the most disturbing insight of all, for it is an acknowledgement that we have done so little to this point to end the needless parade of death. By the end of the day, Mr. Chairman, another Alaskan will have died from tobacco, and another following, and the day after that, and the day after that. To not use the settlement funds for tobacco control would amount to disregarding the thousands of deaths that have gone before and turning our backs on the thousands yet ahead. You have the ability to change that. The only question is whether you will. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Eric. Representative Mulder had to step out for a minute. This is Representative Bundy, and we'll continue in Anchorage. Cynthia Hull, please.
Yes, good evening, committee, and the current chair, Representative Bundy. I'm an advocate for children. I sit with several networks and groups that work on children's issues, primarily child care funding, and support for child care provider training. Thank you, Chairman, and thanks to the committee for recognizing the importance of funding the child assistance, BRU, within the Community and Regional Affairs Subcommittee recommendations. This funding includes funding for child care programs, for training and education, for referral services for parents, and for training child care providers. It also includes child daycare assistance, which is so vital to working parents and to employers, and hence to our economy. Head Start grants, funding the statewide collaboration between Head Start and child care providers, is also covered through this funding. Parents and all in both rural and urban Alaska and all socioeconomic levels benefit from this funding. We appreciate what you're doing for children of Alaska. They are our future.
Thank you very much. In Anchorage, Marlene Luke.
Hello, my name is Marlene Luke. I know you all must be very tired because this sounds like some kind of financial triage to me. I've been sitting here listening since about 6 o'clock and I feel like I'm in an operating room with a bunch of wounded bodies laying around me. So I don't envy you having to make these cuts to the budget. I came here tonight to specifically ask you to support public television. Of all the things that we need in this country, in the state, I think probably truth ranks up there right with all the rest. And if it was a material thing, we could probably put a price on it, but in this case, we can't. So I can't think of a better bargain than they're asking, I think, for $7 a person statewide to maintain the funding. And I would suggest $20 a person statewide. I mean, we spend a lot more than that on buildings and primary schools and high schools and colleges. And I get most of my education from public television. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And continuing in Anchorage, Scott McIntyre, please.
Injured
Thank you very much. And continuing in Anchorage, Al Bramstead, please.
Thank you, Chairman Mulder, members of the House Finance Committee. I'm Al Bramstead, General Manager of KTUU-TV and President of the Anchorage Broadcast Television Consortium, BRAMSTEDT. And the first time in our consortium's history, we speak in full unified support of one of our members, KAKN, as well as public stations throughout Alaska. This is a difficult process for each of you as the legislature balances the need to further reduce the cost of state government and retain vital services and programs to meet the public need efficiently. We applaud and support your effort. However, we urge you to reconsider your plan to further reduce state's funding of public broadcasting. We hold that these additional cuts beyond those public broadcasting has incurred during these last few years will lead to loss of significant federal matching funds, reduction of employment of public broadcasters statewide, and the elimination of important Alaska public broadcast programs on which your constituents have grown to be dependent and commercial broadcasters will not replace. Public broadcasting has experienced enough cuts in these past years. On behalf of the Anchorage Television Broadcasters, we ask you, please, no more reductions for Alaska's public broadcasters.
Thank you.
And thank you for listening.
And we thank you for testifying. Michael Keach, please.
Yes, sir. This is Michael Keach from testifying for the foster care providers of Alaska, the State Foster Care Association. I'm the president. And two of the areas that I'd like to address this evening are the basic rates that you're looking at cutting for foster care. What I ask you to consider is, let me reduce your pay for the services you perform after you've given the increase, you were just given an increase last year. And then, please promote the occupation to others so they too can receive the same cuts that you're becoming accustomed to. It's not right. It's not what we worked so hard for last year. And one of the things that you need to consider in that is place a parallel with what the federal government did with the military. We parallel in that we're volunteer force as foster families. The military is a volunteer force. We've had a lot of military reductions with the retirement benefits in numerous other areas. The results aren't good. We're struggling now with keeping people, quality people in the military. Foster care is also a volunteer force. We've got some good foster families very involved, and if you start tampering with the basic fundamental needs of taking care of children, and you don't fund those things, you're going to lose foster families. And the second area that I'd like to address is the adoption subsidies. In many cases, children that get adopted are adopted by families who couldn't afford to adopt without the subsidy. The families that are well enough off to afford to adopt children are looking for the perfect child, or child without problems. These aren't the children we have in the system. So what will happen is we'll end up with a bottleneck. And if you look at reducing the subsidies that are pre-existing, the system's even going to become more bottleneck because the families who've already adopted cannot afford them. So I ask you to look at that and ask, is that the right thing to do? We look at things at frugality. Let's look at the per diem rate that you yourselves gave yourself this year of $12 per day. And in addition, the 14 raises that you've received since 1991. Let's be frugal across the board and make smart choices.
Thank you. Just for the record, legislators are paid about $7.50 an hour. Going on to Bob Griffith.
Thank you. My name is Bob Griffith. I entered the room this evening to address you on some areas of concern. And after hearing my boss, Mr. Maestrom, talk, I'm now even more concerned. I feel like I have a red bullseye on my back. Tonight I want to talk to you briefly about the child care and foster care components of the proposed budget. The reduction of the foster care components will probably result in a rollback of $2.36 per day, the rate that we received last year as a foster care providers. Personally, I'm a foster parent. I'm also an adoptive parent and a parent of several biological children. So this would definitely constantly cut into our ability to provide care to Alaska's neediest children. The lack of the subsidized adoptions and guardianships that that aid our foster parents and adoptive parents in taking care of these needy children, needy both physically and mentally, as well as emotionally, will result in some substantial reduction in service. Emergency shelter and treatment beds for children in the state will probably be decreased by 25 children who will not be able to be placed into the residential placement. 26 positions will from DFYS will have to be eliminated or not funded, and that will result in a substantial reduction in our ability to intervene in child abuse and neglect cases. Training efforts for foster parents and adoptive parents will be hampered because of the reduction in proposed funds. The tobacco control, of course, we've heard lots of testimony this evening on that, and I'd like to also address that as well as an area of concern to all parents. And finally, the substance abuse treatment programs will have to be reduced based on the funding that's been proposed. The substance abuse treatment is a direct reduction in positive reduction in the number of children born with fetal alcohol syndrome and other complications from prenatal drug and alcohol use. And I'd like you to urge you to reconsider these reductions. Thank you.
And thank you. Continuing now with Shawnee Hart.
Good evening. My name is Shawnee Hart, last name spelled H-A-R-T. I'm from Parents Incorporated. I'm also here as a foster parent and a parent that is applying for a subsidized adoption. I think that the cuts would be very harmful. For instance, my child I have had since January of 95, and being that I wouldn't be able to have a subsidized adoption would mean either A, I would have to give her up, which would be very harmful to her, being that we are the only family she's ever known, and B would be that I could give up my job and go on welfare and let you, the state, support me rather than me support the children myself. Subsidy I would use to pay for the child's daycare that she would need while I work. It's very wrong for you guys to cut that. Also, these children come into your home. They can be angels one moment. As they become comfortable in your home, other issues do pop up as far as sexual abuse, neglect issues that they finally come comfortable enough to tell you about. There comes the issue of you have to have the gas to transport these children back and forth to counseling. You need to get the training yourself, and if the training dollars are cut, you don't get the training to know how to handle these children. And I thank you for your time.
And I thank you. Understand that we have a time constraint there in Anchorage. I'd like to go to Arlis Sturzaluski, please.
She's coming.
Thank you.
Funds are recommending being recommended for cuts.
Thank you. Just a reminder that we're just representing those folks that sent us here and are doing what they ask us to do. Now in Anchorage, Gail Igo, please.
Thank you. I'm Gail Igo. I'm the co-president of the Anchor Foster Care Association, and I was horrified to learn of the reduction in the basic rate for foster care. What I have found out is that legislators are willing to pay less for the care of Alaska median children than it would cost me to board my Malamute. We need to invest in Alaska's future. I have been a foster parent for approximately 20 years. I know we can affect change, but it does take time, energy, and resources. I hope that you will reconsider also the line item of training for foster parents. In order to be an effective foster parent with severely emotionally disturbed children, you need to have support and training provided. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. I'll turn the gavel back over to Representative Mulder now, who has rejoined us.
Next to Ed Ratliff.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Ed Ratliff. I'm here testifying on behalf of the Board of Directors of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated. We operate the two public broadcast facilities here in Anchorage, KAKM Channel 7 and KSKA Public Radio. We're obviously here asking that you reconsider the elimination you've made of any funding for public television and restore the cuts for public radio. As you've worked real hard over these past few years to bring your state spending within line with the revenues, the public broadcasting sector has certainly received and absorbed what we would consider its fair share of the state reductions. In our two stations alone, KAKM Channel 7 has already received reductions of 85% in the state revenues from FY95 through FY98. KSKA Public Radio has received 71%. Between these two stations alone, that's a loss of over $588,000 in state revenue. Now, from our standpoint, we've been able to absorb these losses by a variety of things, which you might imagine. Reduce the staff, reduce or eliminate our services. We've also increased our membership contributions and increased volunteer activities. These reductions, as we've said, have come at the expense of the administrative side of public broadcasting. They have not had much of an impact on programming or on the technical delivery of our services. But any further elimination of the funding could have a devastating effect, not only on our services, but on the services of the entire public broadcast facility throughout the state of Alaska. One point that we would want to highlight is what Mr. Bramstedt spoke to earlier. One of the very important funding impacts that would occur with your reduction or elimination of funding for the public broadcasting is the public broadcast facility's ability to receive funds from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. CPB provides grants to stations based upon their level of support at their state level. In FY98, for example, due to the previous reductions in state funding, KAKM Channel 7 lost $36,000 in Corporation for Public Broadcasting grants. In summary, the legislature's proposal to eliminate the $845,000 in state grants to television would ultimately cost the state and the individual stations much more than that. We're talking about $1.7 million in matching federal funds to Alaska's public television stations. And you've heard testimony tonight about the University of Alaska system. At UAA alone, there's a proposed $500,000 to $750,000 in proposed annual telecourse revenue that would be lost. So there's no question that you as legislators have a difficult choice. And we are strongly urge you to find a way to provide for the much-needed funding to the public broadcasting arena here in Alaska. It provides a vital service that is worthy of state support and desperately needs that support if the services continue. I thank you very, very much.
Thank you very much, Ed.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Davies.
Thank you. Had distributed a copy of Arla Sturgilewski's comments. I just wanted to add those to the record as an extension of her remarks.
We will do that. Thank you very much for bringing that up. We will deviate a little bit from the schedule. I've been made aware that a couple of the Assembly members do have their Assembly meeting going on. George Wirch and Faye Von Gemmingen. Madam,
thank you.
You bet, Madam Chairman. Please begin.
This is Faye Von Gemmingen, and George Wirch is with me tonight.
say a few comments about this because we certainly have our own opinion, as does the mayor, so I'll let you
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for having this hearing and letting us have our turn at the microphone here. As you know, we're in the midst of an assembly meeting here tonight, so we stepped away from that forum to join yours. You have a very unenviable job, and that is trying to balance the spending with the revenues. But you know, that job is very parallel to what we do at the local level, not only in Anchorage, but every local government throughout the state. The question of eliminating state communities and revenue sharing creates a monumental task for local governments, and we appeal to you not to proceed with the elimination of that program for two reasons. First of all, it's the best buy you have. The money you send to local government goes directly to services and benefits to the citizens that in many cases are your constituents. It's those dollars are spent with minimum overhead and minimum bureaucracy. Second issue is that by eliminating the program, you in fact create a tax, because the reduction of revenue sharing and the state communities funding is directly reflected in the increased cost to local taxpayers. So we appeal to you to do the same things there that local governments are doing throughout the state. That's trying to tighten the belt, find other places to make sure that the spending matches the revenue. But so don't simply step aside from this problem and shift it to local governments. We ask you not to pass that buck, but to carry the ball further on your own. And we'll continue to do what we can to keep our spending in check so that we see a healthier economy throughout the state. Thank you very much.
We need to be reminded, too, that the program started in 1969. It wasn't an oil revenue giveaway program. And it's very necessary, as you've heard tonight, from our for our villages and cities around the state who depend on this money for public safety and health. It really means a lot to most of us, and all of us, as a matter of fact, because it's so important to funding the very essential services that are needed. And we have undergone about 70% cuts in this program in the past 10 years. Right now, Anchorage is undergoing quite a few cuts because of the individual cuts that ARCO, BP, and their supporting partners have made in the oil industry. And now with the merger, the proposed merger of ARCO and BP, we're going to see further cuts. And we are leery, as you are too, about how this is going to affect Anchorage. We still have an unfunded mandate from the state, about $12 to $14 million senior citizen disabled veterans property tax exemption, and we need to remind you that we are picking up that unfunded mandate. So we hope that you can restore those monies back to the budget and think about how dollar for dollar they are really important to the city. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairman Von Gimmigan, and give our regards to the rest of the assembly. We'll go back up the schedule again to Tom Brennan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Tom Brennan. I'm a business consultant and a member of the KSKA Advisory Board, and I'd like to address the funding for the public broadcasting. I know at this stage, I believe you are considering full funding for radio, but defunding television, and I fear that would be a serious mistake because the two are very much interdependent. And if the television stations went down, I think you would find a very large part of the public radio broadcasting system would go down as well. We currently have public television stations in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Bethel, and the radio stations are much more widely distributed over the state. I'm not much of a television viewer. I'm primarily a radio viewer, but as a radio listener, I'm very concerned about the television stations. I have a few examples of how they're interdependent. And as a result of a group buy that the stations made, virtually all of the radio stations, the public radio stations in Alaska, can now receive the national public radio programming, which is excellent. And those four television stations pay two-thirds of the total statewide cost of that carrying NPR. Also, APRN depends on the dues from Anchorage, Fairbanks, Bethel, and Juneau for 30% of its total dues income. The 80% of the staff at KSKA and KAKM in Anchorage work for both stations, and in Juneau and Fairbanks, about a third of the staff work for both radio and television. Radio and TV share expenses like occupancy costs, insurance, utilities, maintenance. And Anchorage TV picks up two-thirds of the infrastructure costs. KSKA receives all of its physical plant resources from TV, including the tower in which all public radio in Anchorage is broadcast. KSKA depends on KAKM for its audio switching, satellite interconnection, isolated power, air conditioning, a lot more. And the native station, KNBA and KSKA, signals pass through the television microwaves to the transmitter site at Goose Bay. And the transmitter site is maintained and paid for by television. KNBA, in fact, could not broadcast without resources provided by television. I have a longer list, but I'm going to skip over because I want to address one more issue that Horace touched on, and that is, where is the money going to come from this? Well, I've been in Alaska for 32 years, and I voted for the permanent fund, and I voted for it because I considered it a rainy day account. And I think it's fair to say that it's raining. And I realize there's some controversy about it, but if you feel the need to take $1 billion from the Constitutional Budget Reserve this year, I say go right ahead. I believe that's what the money is there for. At some point, we're going to have to reimpose a state income tax. I don't think we're going to do that. We have $20 billion, $25 billion in the savings account, but that's the direction we'll have to go in. Also, I think it's very important that you consider capping the size of the permanent fund dividend checks. They're increasing rapidly, and I think they're approaching the point where you're going to find families, perhaps large families, moving to Alaska for the sole reason that each member of that family comes with a subsidy of $2,000 a year or more. That's also going to encourage people to have children because they come with a subsidy, and I think that that's going to be a disincentive to good public behavior, and it's going to work against the state's interest in the long run. And I think families and individuals that are so motivated are going to be a net drag on the community. They'll cost far more than they'll bring to us.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you very much, Tom. I apologize to everybody for being forced to wait. But we'll keep going down the line.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Davies.
I just wonder if Tom is still there. If he could send us the complete list that he had, I would appreciate it.
Yes, I have that here.
If you could fax that down to us, Tom, that would be great. Or give that to the LIO operator and she can fax it down to us.
Glad to do that.
Okay, and again, I'll try and remind members to, or people testifying, public members who are testifying, to try and keep their comments as close to a minute as possible, realizing it's pretty tough, so I've been giving a lot of latitude or leeway, but try and keep your comments as brief as possible. Dino Allen, and then Vern McCorkle.
How you doing? Thank you. Dino Allen, former chairman of the Citizens Foster Care Review Board. I here to urge you to reconsider your cut on that program, as that board was established in December of 1997. It took us a little bit of time to establish the bylaws, to recruit the volunteers. We had a staff of two people. One social worker, one admin person, no program coordinator. So by the time we got the program coordinator in, the bylaws established, set some policies, some guidelines, established how we're going to increase from 100 to about 300 people, all those things are coming about now. And then there was the fact about, you know, trying to expand and get some more funds to go into Fairbanks. However, that was a battle. But with some skills between myself and a lot of the other board members, we managed to tap into some 4E middle, Title 4E monies with the DFYS, Russ Webb, their commissioner, and we were going to see some funds there so we could expand the program and go out. There's one piece of data here I think is interesting, is that when you try to compare the program to see who outperformed what other programs, no one ever asked the kids. Our mission was to take a look at those kids in foster care and see that they do not linger unnecessarily in foster care. We cut that by about 50% on each of those children that we reviewed. We got some legislation that led us into the court system, and our recommendations were read right in court. So, as a volunteer for that past year, put on a lot of work, and I didn't receive any funds, $7 an hour or $8 an hour, anything. But I lost a lot of time with family and things of that nature to try to help this program along, and I think it needs to give another year to see the data before it's done.
All right. Thank you very much, Dino. I appreciate your comments this evening. Next to Vern McCorkle and then Geraldine Bodman.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Vern McCorkle. Last
Alaska at its present level, if not more. I have been associated with public broadcast in a number of rural communities in Alaska, Kodiak, Haines, St. Paul, and Dillingham. And I've spent one of my careers, at least, as a city manager in small towns, specializing in rural Alaska. And I have a different point of view, I think, on public broadcast in Alaska than you might hear this evening. I will leave to the others who have spoken before me the definition of the technology that's involved, the interdependence, which is so important in keeping both radio and television going, and the quality of the programming. But as a result of living in rural Alaska for over 20 years, I realize that in rural Alaska, we really have depended upon the communications that we receive from radio and television in that neighborhood. Local and regional programming and communication is just not possible from network television or from the use of the internet. It's true that there are more